Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. It's been more than 40 years since HIV and AIDS made their unwelcome entry into the modern world, and despite the big strides that scientists have made in fashioning effective treatments, the fact remains that we still do not have a vaccine or a cure. What's more, huge numbers of people, especially in the southern United States, continue to contract and spread the disease. Earlier this week, I got a chance to discuss this still vexing health crisis with Christina Adeleke of the North Carolina AIDS Action Network. As Adeleke pointed out, the emergence of COVID-19 is not helping this already challenging situation. Well, Christina Adeleke, welcome back to News and Views. It's good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, these are extraordinary times for lots of us in lots of different areas, and I'm sure that's the case for folks working in advocacy to combat HIV and AIDS in North Carolina and around the country. Talk to us about the state of this battle right now and the work you're doing.
Yes, although most of the country and the world has slowed down quite a bit, the work that we do has continued to go on and has definitely experienced a bit of a highlight in our current COVID-19 pandemic times. We've seen how our community has been able to mobilize and move the movement of HIV forward in the past, and we've been able to use those same mobilizing efforts to push things forward with the current COVID-19 pandemic. Our work has definitely been focused on helping address the healthcare needs that have come up as a result, but have honestly been around prior to COVID.
Well, obviously COVID is just exacerbating an issue. I thought it would be useful for our listeners to be reminded of the fact as we contemplate this rush to find a COVID vaccine, which of course we hope is successful, the reality for people living with HIV is there's still, almost 40 years later, no vaccine to prevent infection from HIV.
Doesn't that seem crazy? I mean, we've made so many medical strides in the context of HIV and in the world of HIV, and, you know, we've come such a long way. But it is true that, you know, after 40 years, we would have hoped that a vaccine would have come. And, you know, now seeing with COVID-19, of course, that is a pressing concern, and a vaccine would definitely be necessary. But The sense of urgency is definitely different. I feel like, you know, and I think we can take all the time in the world to unpack why that is, but I think that is a noticeable distinction because it has been 40 years and there hasn't been that same sense of urgency yet. Now, after a few months, we're in trials and the FDA is expediting a lot of things. So it's an interesting thing to note.
Well, indeed, our Joe Killian, who's a reporter at NC Policy Watch, wrote an interesting story earlier this spring about the fact that for many people who are survivors of the HIV pandemic, this has really been an extra traumatic time in that they're reliving much of their past and seeing this, again, a health pandemic that's such a threat. And it's almost like a PTSD kind of experience for many people who are coping with HIV.
Absolutely, absolutely. We've been having lots of conversations with our advocates, particularly long-term survivors, and they are really struggling with grappling with these times that we're in and seeing how people are changing how they normally interact with humans. And I feel like for people living with HIV, there's that inherent fear that because of their status, people are going to treat them differently and are going to want to distance themselves from them socially. And so now in the times that we're in, we're seeing almost parallels to that treatment, even though with HIV, it isn't transmitted comparably to COVID-19. Right. It doesn't flow through the air. There's, you know, no masks needed.
Right.
Yet there was still that same treatment as if it were the case. And so, you know, people who have survived that, have grappled with that, and have come to a good place are now being confronted with that. But then also people who have been newly diagnosed and are, you know, just grappling with their status, having to also deal with the COVID-19 pandemic. It's almost having to deal with two pandemics at the same time.
Well, another grim parallel, of course, is the fact that in both of these terrible health crises, we see the fact that people of color, people of low income, people who are already marginalized in society, tend to be the people who are disproportionately impacted. And so I gather that remains the case with HIV in North Carolina, and indeed in the South, where we have very high numbers still of infection and even undiagnosed infection.
Yes, yes. Unfortunately, you will find in healthcare more broadly, you're always going to find those racial disparities. And HIV is no different. COVID-19 is no different. You know, you're going to find a lot of those disparities for a lot of different reasons, whether it be economic insecurity, it could be historic racism, systemic racism that has permeated through all of our systems, including healthcare. Mm-hmm. And, you know, also when it comes to the lack of healthcare for some people of color, some of us have had the privilege of being able to stay home and work and continue to work, but some lower income workers have not had that luxury and have had to continue to put themselves on the line for us to be able to continue our lives. Yeah. And that comes at a real cost. You know, when it comes to COVID-19 transmissions and all of that. And, you know, it is tough to see the racial disparities that come as a result of that. It definitely makes me think that there absolutely needs to be more done to address those disparities.
Well, let's talk about that in the time we have left. I know you all had a virtual advocacy day earlier this month. You have obviously items that you are challenging state and federal policymakers to take on. There are obviously things that could be done to address the spread of both viruses, but in particular HIV. We don't want it to get lost in the shuffle here. It remains a huge problem in our society, a huge threat to public health. What are some of the things that lawmakers should be doing to more aggressively to address this issue?
Well, you know, I think with where we're at right now, it makes the most sense for the state to expand Medicaid on so many levels. We honestly did not need COVID-19 to show that, but this pandemic has definitely shown a bright light on the need for a system that will be able to provide comprehensive coverage, not only COVID-19 testing and treatment, but comprehensive healthcare coverage for people to be able to live their lives and be safe. And it's going to be able to benefit the people who need it the most, the people who are on the front lines, people who are lower income workers, our grocery workers, our Instacart delivery people, all of those people are included in that category. And so with the timing that we're in, knowing that we need to be wise with the resources that we have, if our government is wanting to make the most of what we have, Medicaid expansion would be such a good investment because, you know, the federal government obviously is going to be paying for 90% of that.
Right.
And so with what we're getting out of that, it makes no sense not to.
Yeah. North Carolina remains, it's worth reiterating, one of just a handful of states now to continue to reject Medicaid expansion, even though it literally would bring billions of dollars to the state, create thousands of jobs, and provide health insurance to hundreds of thousands of low-income working people who simply are priced out of the current healthcare system, but theoretically make too much to get, you know, assistance under the way the Affordable Care Act set up. It's just an absurd catch-22 that lots and lots of our fellow North Carolinians are trapped in.
Absolutely. And, you know, when we think about the Medicaid program, it is the number one insurer for people living with HIV. And so if we just take the HIV community and just look at that one sect of the community, if people who are in that community are able to have comprehensive healthcare coverage, that means they're able to be on their medication. That means their viral loads will be suppressed. That means they'll be physically unable to transmit HIV to other people. But then let's say on the flip side, what if people living with HIV don't have access to their medication? What does that mean for the broader public health of our state, of our country? You know, at that point now, it's not just impacting a small community, it's impacting all of us. And so when we're thinking about making investments and how that impact is going to reach people on so many different levels, of course, we can look at the economic benefit. But, you know, when we look at lives, it's going to impact all of us.
it's just remains a stunning matter that we here in North Carolina have not gone down this road. We very much hope that you will be successful, along with the other advocates for healthcare expansion in our state, who keep pressing for Medicaid expansion. It still seems as if it's just going to have to be a matter of time at some point before the opposition finally gives in. Is there anything else you think that folks should know about? Are there budget items? Are there any other legislative agenda items that you guys at the North Carolina AIDS Action Network are championing here in 2020?
Yes, we're definitely working on increasing appropriations for hepatitis treatment and testing in our state, working to help people who use drugs and hopefully have funding for syringe exchange programs and be able to help with that work going on even now in COVID-19 times, probably more so. And also in other areas such as reproductive justice and health, and making sure we're increasing PrEP and PEP access to people and ensuring that barriers that are currently in place are not, especially now, and increasing telehealth and all of that, and definitely helping to address racial health disparities. Always on the list.
Of course.
But especially now.
It's a long list. We're so glad that you're there to be doing this critically important work. If folks would like to learn more about the network and maybe volunteer or help or make a contribution, how could they get in touch with y'all? Is there a website they should check out?
Yes. Check out www.ncaan.org. And you can check us out on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram.
Christina, thank you so much for being with us. We wish you all the best in your important work. Please keep up the good work, and we'll check in again later this year, perhaps, and maybe get a chance to celebrate a few victories.
Absolutely. Thanks, Rob.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. Remember, you can stay up to date on the latest news about COVID-19 at the State Department of Health and Human Services website, ncdhhs.gov. You can also check us out online and subscribe to our free newsletters at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Henkel, this is Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views. A weekly look at state and policy issues is a production of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com.